Today, we've had a national tragedy.
Smoke is billowing out of the building from the upper floors of Tower One. You can see the smoke for miles and miles.
Hello, ma'am?
Here's the call.
Ma'am?
Stay calm.
There have been two explosions, one high on one of the Twin Towers, and then just a short while ago, another explosion. And now both of those Twin Towers are smoking. They are on fire.
I'm going to die, aren't I?
No.
I'm going to die.
Ma'am, say your prayers. And we're not going to die. We're going to think positive because you got to help detail to get off the floor.
What's up, everybody? My name is Isaac, host of Conspiracy Theories and Unpopular Culture. As I told you a year ago, that I would be doing a massive deep dive into the occult symbolism of 9/11. The ritualistic experience that we all, well, experienced. You know what I'm saying. And we're going to dive deeper than you've ever dove into the world of the symbolism behind the attacks on 9/11. We'll get a little bit of Twilight language, gematria, numerology elements in there. And I told you last year, I said, look, I did not have enough time to get through what I needed to get through. I was writing my Alien books, which are both on Amazon and Audible, which you already picked up. Thank you for your kind reviews. But I found it curious because we shifted priorities last year and not realizing it, we'd be hitting the 20th anniversary. Right in the midst of the thing that will never go away, making everybody a conspiracy theorist. But today we're going to talk about 9/11. And this is part one. We're going to have four parts, by the way. If I've learned one thing about podcasting, I think I can gauge how to break this up appropriately for you and for me into one-hour chunks. Four shows. Part one, false flags, pop culture, and predictive programming, where we're going to talk about those things. That's the most, dare I say, relatable argument for normies. Then part two, we're going to talk about the occult symbolism behind 9/11. Then parts three and four are going to be a book club. Yes, a book club. A book club on 9/11 as a mass ritual by S.K. Bain. You know who that is. You've heard him on Tinfoil Hat. The expert on Kabbalah. The conspiracy guy. That guy knows what he's talking about. Let me tell you this much. If you got that book, you would not be disappointed. The foreword is by Peter Lavenda, one of the most intelligent, esoteric, occult people of all time. People. Good one, Isaac. Sorry, my brain's a little mushy. I'm juggling way too many things at the moment. Got contributions by the great William Ramsey, who's been on this show. Michael Hoffman. Yeah, the book is phenomenal, and I'm going to go over it with you. And I'm not going to cover every bit of that book, so if you wanted that book, which I do recommend it, it's very good. And he was on Tinfoil Hat, and I can tell you they did not even scratch the surface, because there's too much in there. It's too much to talk about. I'm not talking bad about Sam Tripoli, my BFF. I'm not talking bad. I'm just saying there was an hour dedicated to that subject and that book. And I'm telling you, that book is so jam-packed full of information, it'll make your head spin. And we're going to cover that book. So if you wanted to speed read through it before the big book club thing, go for it, because that's going to be parts three and four. So there you go. That's kind of all the preamble I've got for you, because we got a lot to talk about. And I'm going to try to bust these episodes out over the next couple of weeks. around 9/11, the 20th anniversary, the greatest PSYOP of all time, the greatest false flag ever. We lived through it. Can you believe it? Well, maybe the second greatest. Depends on your stance. But we're not here to talk about that thing. You know, the thing that will never go away. But yeah, 9/11. Let's get into part one. False flags, pop culture, and predictive programming. Oh, and before I forget, one more piece of housekeeping. On Patreon and IlluminatiWatcher.com's VIP section, I offered up tier 4, okay? Tier 4 meant you were such a big supporter that you could come on the show and do conspiracy considerations where you explain your conspiracy theory to the public. I have to cut it out. It's proving to be more difficult than I thought. That's why I don't do guests on this show, because my schedule is way too hectic. And it's proving that I can't give my supporters what they deserve, the attention they deserve on that thing. So I got to cut it. And maybe I'll bring it back if I ever quit the dreaded day job. But I just had too much going on with the research and the podcast. And I'm doing a lecture in Salt Lake in September at FanEx. Provided that's still going on, which I think it will be. Should be. I signed up for it. I'll be selling books there. So if you're in Salt Lake, September 17th or 18th, I'll be there. I won't be there the 16th. But anyhow, yeah. Tier 4, I'm going to do. I got a couple more that I'm working with some people that already paid for the full month of it. I'm going to get them in. But then I'm cutting it out. No more. I'm sorry. I still have the Tier 4 open. People want to support at that level, which, look, I'll take it. I appreciate it. That's very kind of you. I'm still paying off legal bills from 3 months ago getting sued for the website, so I appreciate that. But like I always say, I want, if this comes down to you getting a good meal once a month versus you supporting the show, get the meal. Take care of yourself. I'm fine. I got two jobs. It's fine. I appreciate the support. I don't say that to sound negative about it. I'm just saying, I'm fine. Thank you for your support. Some people are so kind that they want to keep that support going. So I've kept Tier 4 open. Shout out Cheryl. She's always hooking it up. And you people are too kind to me. I leave it open, and I'll try to find a way of doing like a special shout out. Like once a month, I'll do the shout out of the Tier 4 folks on their own instead of the mass 100 plus names on the Tier 2 shout outs. I don't know, bear with me. I'm trying to figure this out. Trying to juggle all these things, make it fun. So there you go. Housekeeping's over. 9/11, conspiracy theories part one, false flags, pop culture, and predictive programming. Let's go. 9/11. 911. The number for emergencies. Chosen originally, I believe it was in the 60s, for its ability to be easily remembered. For you to never forget 9/11. Well, doesn't that ring true in 2001? 9/11 happened and they said, you'll never forget. They told you, they instructed you. Just like the 911 emergency phone number, they said you would never forget it. It's a bit of a psyop in its own, a bit of a neurolinguistic programming, I'm not sure. So this is... And whether or not this really happened, whether or not this happened, I shouldn't say really happened, whether or not this is what we've been told it is, the fact remains, from a psychological standpoint, there's some impacts, and that's worth listening to these four shows, okay? There's some coincidences that I find to be more than intriguing when you look at the history of occult symbolism, psychological operations, and false flags. So is 9/11 kind of like the, COVID, the thing that will never go away? Kind of. It was 20 years before. It was right at, it's kind of like, if you look at the timing, it was right at the start of the George Bush administration. Much like the thing that will never go away happened in the voting year for what it turned out to be the most participated in election in the history of the world. So, where were you? Where were you when it happened? when the towers fell. I've told this story before, but I think I only did these on my Patreon live streams. So bear with me if you've heard this before. I was in the Air Force, right? I was an ammo troop working in the bomb dump in South Korea, doing a short tour deployment for a year. As fate would have it, that year was 2001, that whole calendar year. And I was there when it happened. It was like, I don't remember, 2 a.m. I was dating Miss Josie Weishaupt at the time. We were doing the long distance romantic military thing. I never got the Dear John letter, thank goodness. I had a couple attempted Jodies coming her way, but that never worked out, thank goodness. And I think, I want to say she got a hold of me at like 2 a.m. or someone did. It's 2 a.m. in Korea-ish. Obviously, like, I don't know, was it 8 or 9 a.m. in New York when this thing happened? Got the call. Everyone in the military, we were all like hanging out in the day room, like, whoa, what's happening? We're going to war, blah, blah, blah. And the irony of it, there was this guy, this master sergeant, I'll keep his name anonymous. There was this master sergeant who that whole year, you know, because he was like an old timer and I was in there with all the young dudes and he'd walk around the bombed up saying, man, we need a war. He said this sentence, I bet I heard it 30 times. And why was he saying that? He was saying that because a bunch of us young troops were like screwing off. If we got our little task accomplished, our little mission done, we'd be hanging out in the break room screwing off. And he'd be pissed off. Because, you know, the old schoolers would work themselves, grind themselves down to the bone. And we'd be screwing off. He'd be like, man, we need a war. Meaning we need to get these young kids working. What are they doing? Well, manifested into reality on 9/11. Which I think was like 9/12 in Korea. I don't remember how it worked out. It doesn't matter. Anyhow, it's like 2 a.m. Everyone's freaking out. And as fate would have it, I'm not trying to violate OPSEC here. I had to man the gate at the explosives area, right? Because you can't just go into the explosives area. You got to have the right clearances, whatever. And as fate would have it, I was on guard duty that day. And we get the recall thing. We're going to war. Blah, blah, blah. Oh, shit. Okay. So I'm walking by myself. You got to walk like a mile or two to this place. And it was dark. It was eerie as hell. I'm walking by myself in the dark. Like, what the hell is going on? You know, my mind is blown watching these towers fall into TV. I said, holy crap. I'm supposed to go back home in 3 months. I ain't never going home. I wanted to go home and see Josie. That's all I wanted in life. I was like, I'm going home. I'm getting my girl. And I'm getting out of the military. F this noise. So I go out there. And I open up shop, whatever. And, you know, then everyone starts filtering in for duty. And we were supposed to get the guns. Because this was a much more, you know, pre-9/11. I don't know if you already know this. The Air Force was pretty relaxed, hence the reason I joined, because I'm not that gung-ho of a guy, all right? Not to take anything away from, like, the Army and the Marines, but, like, you know, it's just a different kind of thing. And I was waiting to get my M16. I said, holy shit, because I'm scared to death. I'm like, dude, they're attacking. You know, when you're in South Korea, like, you understand the imminent threat that North Korea has. I mean, it's like a couple minutes away from airstrikes from the North Koreans. They could come and go for it. You know, because we learned how to do emergency destruction munitions where you'd blow up the whole bomb dump and kill yourself so they wouldn't get your bombs, you know? And it was a real threat, right? Like, we run out on gas masks and crap the whole year, even though it's hot as hell. It's a real deal. So I'm scared. I'm like, oh, boy, here we go. Of course. I'm going to die over here in South Korea. Thanks. Thanks, Taliban or whoever. And I'm waiting to get the gun. Don't get the gun. I'm like, where's my damn gun? And there's this van that pulls up, and the van, this real strange looking guy, he looked like Borat. I didn't know who Borat wasn't a thing in 2001, but in hindsight, looking back on it, I'll never forget what this guy looked like. He looked like Borat. Big bushy hair, big bushy mustache, and he had a windbreaker on. And this was not a typical visitor to where I worked. And I go outside the gate and I walk up to his car right away. I'm like, you know, whatever, what's your ID, why you're here, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, oh, I need to check your perimeter or whatever. And I'm like, no, I guess not. You're not going to do that, whatever, because you didn't have the credentials. And he's like, well, I do. Let me call the guy on the inside, whatever. So he goes to the gate shack. My buddy's in the gate shack, and he's kind of like watching over the phone call. And I'm standing by the van, sort of like keeping an eye on the people in the van. And I look back at my buddy in the gate shack, and I see homeboy Borat getting on the phone, and he's got a windbreaker on. And the wind catches his windbreaker, and it pulled in the back of his pants. I'm not great with guns, but I swear to God, the dude had an Uzi. It was something that looked like an Uzi. And I thought, oh my God, I'm about to die. And as you could imagine, there's no great, no great punchline to the story. Because I didn't die or get shot. But he went, made the phone call. I see the gun. I said, oh my God, I'm about to die. And I'm looking at the guys in the van like, are they about to pull a gun on me? And the next thing I know, he comes walking back to the van and he's like, all right, I'm out. See ya. And then they leave. And I tell the superiors, I'm like, yo, this guy had like a gat. And, nothing ever became of it. So I don't know what his deal was. I don't know if it was like some secret squirrel intelligence stuff. I don't know what happened there. But the story is I almost became the first military casualty after 9/11. That's all I'm saying. Now, if you watch the news, right, and the clips from that whole day, as you have, the news, right? Like, we all were glued to the TV sets. You know, the mainstream media, they were loving 9/11, right? They love a good tragedy. If you watch the news and the clips from that day, if you even, you know, I was just watching them last week. It's like you're watching a movie. People say that all the time. They say it was like a movie because it's true. And think about this. New York City is one of the most filmed cities on the planet. It's practically the real Hollywood, if you think about it, right? And Hollywood, of course, being the home of magic and illusion. And, you know, you talk about the Holly wand, the Holly tree used for the wands like Harry Potter uses. Was it a coincidence that this show was put on in the same place that we're conditioned to see the movies? It was a ritual no different than 2001 A Space Odyssey, an evolution of man ritual. Because the whole idea with Kubrick's film was he was transforming mankind as they watched this movie. He was opening up their eyes and enlightening them. Is there a coincidence that, of course, it was called 2001 A Space Odyssey? I'd argue that's the case. They knew what was going on. Also, if you go back to, I'm listening to this weird podcast about Francis Bacon and early Shakespearean plays and stuff. Entertainment back then was the first PSYOP. Back then, they were working with intelligence agencies and spies, and they knew that entertainment was the best way to dupe people. So then you got Hollywood, where they're putting on these movies, which just so happened to mostly be in New York. I mean, obviously not every movie. I'm talking in generalizations. I would argue New York City is probably the most filmed city out of any city on the whole planet, right? I haven't looked that up. I could be wrong. But it's interesting that this attack would happen in New York City, where we see all the movies. So let's talk about false flags, in case you don't know what this is. False flags means there's a false event that happens to get us into a skirmish or to advance an agenda, maybe. And here's some examples. Because I'm just telling you right now, that's the claim about 9/11 is just another false flag. Some people would argue that the thing from 2020 that will never go away is the same. I mean, we could go down that rabbit hole again if you want. I don't want. I think there's some people getting really jacked up by that thing that won't go away. And you know what I mean? This is a personal health decision at this point. I don't want to talk about it. It's up to you. Don't be influenced. Make your own decisions with all that, right? Just be safe. Just try to be as safe as you can, right? I don't think we're facing a real safe set of choices to make. I think you're going to have to roll the dice whether you go stabby or stabby jabby or you don't. You're rolling the dice either way, right? Anyhow. Vietnam, one of the biggest false flags of all time. The Gulf of Tonkin incident. August of 1964. Let's go back in time. The U.S. was in the Gulf of Tonkin by Vietnam, and they basically made the claim that the North Vietnamese were attacking them. And that's what got us into the Vietnam War. Many years later, then Secretary of Defense Robert McNamara confirmed that this never happened. Fake news. Fake news. I mean, say what you want about Donald Trump. I certainly have. I don't like the guy. But his fake news stuff was interesting. I mean, he used it to his advantage and was like, everything that goes against me is fake news. Everything else is real news. Which ultimately did a disservice to conspiracy theorists, I believe. Same with the QAnon thing. Not everything they believed in was wrong, but they sure were instrumental in making sure conspiracy ideas were put into a fringy, dangerous category. Now, this attack, in the supposed attack that never happened, but at the time they claimed it did, led to the Gulf of Tonkin resolution by the U.S. Congress. And this granted then-President Lyndon B. Johnson the powers to pretty much go to war. It said that we could assist Southeast Asia against communist aggression. Yes. Because the Constitution says that Congress declares the war, but over the years you'll notice the presidents have been finding ways around that. But, of course, it's always against communism, the worst thing ever. Now, pop culturally speaking, the U.S. ship that was claimed to have been attacked was the USS Maddox, which had a certain celebrity admiral named George Morrison, who was the father of Jim Morrison from The Doors. Yes, Mr. Lizard himself. Guy that died in the bathtub like so many celebrities do. His dad was on that Maddox ship. So there you go. That's probably the biggest false flag of all time. Then you got Pearl Harbor. And that's a provable one, that Vietnam one, by the way. And then it gets a little more dicey, like Pearl Harbor. This one's more in the realm of maybe. There's theories that claim the attack at Pearl Harbor was the back door into getting into World War II. Gotta watch that back door. They're always trying to someone's trying to sneak something in there every time. The claim is that we knew it was going to happen. The American politicians and intelligence agencies, all this, they knew it was going to happen. FDR knew it was going to happen. But they allowed it to happen because FDR wanted to go to war. But the American public did not. So how do you get the American public to change their mind? Well, you put on a movie. Put on a movie of watching their own people getting slaughtered and killed. Put up a big memorial. Tug the old heartstrings. Now, it could be that 9/11 was a similar thing. Like, sure, I believe that there were terrorists that wanted to kill us. I believe there was motivation there. Maybe it was the same thing. Maybe, and I'm going to prove to you that Bush and company and the neocons, they sort of were okay with all this on some levels, and that's why it happened. Maybe they let it happen just like FDR let Pearl Harbor happen. Now, there were investigations into this whole issue claiming that, well, you see, what happened was it was a structural issue where they couldn't share the intelligence, which, fast forward another, 60 years, and it's the same thing they claimed with 9/11. Well, The intelligence agencies weren't sharing the information. Darn it. I know what we'll do. We'll create fusion centers where we can collect more intelligence and spy on every single person. And we'll just collect all the data and then everything will go great. But anyway, even after the Pearl Harbor attacks, USA, they were really only mad at Japan. They didn't even want to get involved with Germany. And there was memos showing how Roosevelt and the Pentagon were wanting Germany and Japan to attack us. But officially, they say, well, this is all conspiracy. I don't believe it. How do you believe? How do you know what to believe? You know what I mean? Let's go to another country. Old Germany. Hitler. The beer hall push. Push? How do you pronounce that? Push? Push? In November 1923. This is before World War II and Pearl Harbor, right? Hitler and the Nazis, they tried to take over the government with a coup d'etat. Sounds familiar. He was going to abduct the state commissioner of Bavaria, old Gustav von Kahr. So he took a bunch of Nazis, bunch of tiki torches, surrounded the beer hall where Gustav von Kahr was speaking at. They went in, they fired shots, said, look, we're taking this bitch over. And they almost got it done, too. But some of the dumb Nazis forgot to take over some of the city buildings. And the troops came in and thwarted the whole thing. Hitler goes to prison, writes Mein Kampf with the assistance of Rudolf Hess. Yeah. In fact, I was in the military with a guy who was related to Rudolf Hess. A dude looked just like him, too, by the way. Very strange. Anyhow. Hitler was modeling his attempt after Mussolini, who did the same thing just a couple years prior, October 1922, in his March on Rome. But now, even with Hitler's failed attempt, even with Hitler going to prison, give it 10 more years of patience and persistence, and guess what happens? He finally gets control. Persistent little bastard, isn't he? We also have the Spanish-American War. I don't know much about this. Call me an idiot. That's okay. The USS Maine got sank in the Havana Harbor, blamed on the Spanish. Mainstream media had a chant called Remember the Maine, to hell with Spain. And it blew up, not from the Spanish bombs, but from a fire in a coal bunker. We've got Operation Northwoods, which comes up many times when we talk about 9/11. The CIA was going, they had this plan, right? They were trying to, same thing. JFK was like, how do we get the Americans to hate the Cubans so we can go to war? How can we persuade them? And the CIA was like, here's what we're going to do. Let's stage acts of terrorism against American targets and American military. We'll blame the Cuban government to justify going to war against China. We'll fake hijack some planes. We'll blow up a ship. All of this, of course, to fight the worst thing ever, communism. But JFK rejected it. And you see where that got him. Even viruses can be false flag propaganda. Look at the Spanish flu. Had nothing to do with Spain. Had to do with America going to war in World War I, where it got spread. But, you know, there's this thing about don't mess with the industrial complex. So the news and everyone got together and they were like, well, Spain's neutral. Let's talk about how the flu came from Spain, not from all over Europe. So all this, right? These are just some examples. So was 9/11 a false flag? Let's look at some of the ideas behind this. They did successfully pivot from Afghanistan, where supposedly the terrorists came from, to all of a sudden we're going into Iraq. They did say, oh, Iraq had weapons of mass destruction, which they didn't. The news confused so many people that most people forgot that originally the first real enemy was Afghanistan. And even less knew that some of the hijackers we're actually from Saudi Arabia, which is one of our allies. So you can see things get real sticky. But to look at it in hindsight, it does seem quite possible that they wanted to start this new age. They wanted to turn the page, if you will. Set up the plan for the big UN 2030 or Great Reset or whatever you want to call this thing. The Aeon of Horus, which we'll talk about more in part two. But part of this 1984 hellish nightmare, this New World Order, is surveillance and the invasion of privacy. And look what they were able to pull off. The Cold War was over. They got to find a new existential threat to keep people in fear and manipulate them. So let's call it terrorism. Now, there were some side bonuses, too. We go over to Afghanistan, where all these poppy fields are, that, right, it was where they get heroin from, but this also helped fuel the opioid epidemic. There was also these veins of lithium all over the place, which, by the way, we needed for all those iPhone batteries. Pretty convenient. And look, I don't know. Maybe these are connected. Maybe they're not. They did tell us that these people took over entire planes full of people with plastic box cutters, which sounds very strange. I mean, maybe though, right? Maybe. It wasn't conceivable at the time, was it? If there's one thing I will commit to here, if there's one thing I do know, is that we don't know everything involved here. This is some global big boy inside baseball that we do not have the access to. All I know is there's a lot of weird things going on. We also need to talk about the politics for the New American Century, a.k.a. PNAC, right? If you heard of PNAC, it used to be this neoconservative think tank. I believe they've disbanded since. Had all these big names, William Kristol, Robert Kagan, ties with all kinds of people in the George Bush administration. And they would set up foreign policy ideas and all this crap, right? Well, they were the ones that, and I talked about this in my first book, A Grand Unified Conspiracy Theory, which you can get for free if you go to IlluminatiWatcher.com, sign up for my free email newsletter. You should see a link across the top, or if you go to, Start Here tab, and I'll just email it to you. You'll get it. You can read all about it, all the details about the PNAC. But they were the ones talking about how we needed another Pearl Harbor to get us into the Middle East. I mean, it's the same formula, the same agenda, over and over again. These people that constantly trying to do some kind of domination empire building plot. And they're like, oh, what can we do? Whose lives can we make miserable to do this thing we want to do? And, you know, did that or did that not happen? Just within a couple years of them writing this document, we get these hijackers from Saudi Arabia. So we go to Afghanistan and then we end up in Iraq. General Wesley Clark, he knew all this was happening. He talked about it. He talked about it in an interview about how he saw the documentation talking about how we were jumping to all these other countries that just so happened to be part of this plan hatched in the 90s by the neoconservatives.
Do you see a replay of what happened in the lead-up to the war with Iraq, the allegations of the weapons of mass destruction, the media leaping on to the bandwagon?
Well, in a way, but you know, history doesn't repeat itself exactly twice. What I did warn about when I testified in front of Congress in 2002, I said, if you want to worry about a state, it shouldn't be Iraq, it should be Iran. But this government, our administration, wanted to worry about Iraq, not Iran. I knew why, because I'd been through the Pentagon right after 9/11. About 10 days after 9/11, I went through the Pentagon and I saw Secretary Rumsfeld and Deputy Secretary Wolfowitz. I went downstairs just to say hello to some of the people on the Joint Staff who had used to work for me. And one of the generals called me and he said, "Sir, you got to come in and talk to me a second." I said, "Well, you're too busy." He said, no. He says, "We've made the decision we're going to war with Iraq." This was on or about the 20th of September. I said, "We're going to war with Iraq? Why?" He said, "I don't know." He said, "I guess they don't know what else to do." So I said, well, did they find some information connecting Saddam to al-Qaeda? He said, no, no. He says, there's nothing new that way. They just made the decision to go to war with Iraq. He said, I guess it's like we don't know what to do about terrorists, but we've got a good military and we can take down governments. And he said, I guess if the only tool you have is a hammer, every problem has to look like a nail. So I came back to see him a few weeks later, and by that time we were bombing in Afghanistan. I said, are we still going to war with Iraq? And he said, oh, it's worse than that. He said, he reached over on his desk, he picked up a piece of paper, and he said, I just got this down from upstairs, meaning the Secretary of Defense's office today, and he said, this is a memo that describes how we're going to take out 7 countries in 5 years, starting with Iraq and then Syria, Lebanon, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, and finishing off Iran. I said, is it classified? He said, yes, sir. I said, well, don't show it to me. And I saw him a year or so ago, and I said, you remember that? He said, sir, I didn't show you that memo. I didn't show it to you.
I'm sorry, what did you say his name was?
Which, you know, was a very impressionable moment for me as a young conspiracy theorist trying to make sense of the world. I was like, these bastards, what are they doing? Now, predictions were made about 9/11. My man Freeman Fly, the guy who put me on for my first podcast appearance ever, he predicted it based on the numerology of it, which we're going to talk about, right, in part two. Bill Cooper predicted it. I put a clip on my Instagram, oh man, a year ago. At Isaac Weishaupt, you can scroll through if you want. Michael Hoffman published a book in 1989 called Secret Societies and Psychological Warfare, talking about these kinds of ideas. And what's curious is that I actually bought a Kindle version of that book a while back. And I recently bought the paperback version. And I never understood this because I've actually had a lot of people buy my signed paperbacks on my Gumroad store, right? Gumroad.com/IsaacW, link in the show notes. And when they buy them, they'll be like, yeah, I bought this on Kindle, but I'm buying the paperback too, because in case they ban you or censor you or whatever. And what's crazy, because I'm such a sheep, I'm such a normie sheeple, I often think, well, gosh, that's kind of paranoid, but okay. And I'm the guy who's been censored off of everything. It took me getting sued to finally be like, okay, they're after me for whatever reason. Because I'm always trying to find that rational side of the argument to be like, you know, maybe these people are paranoid. And I'm finally there. I'm finally at the point where I'm like, yeah, I'm buying this book on paperback because they're burning the books. It's happening at some point. When? I don't know. So now I get it. And here I am, spending $30 for 2 copies of the same book. Because sometimes it's easier for me to read on the Kindle. I prefer reading on paperback, but that's not always easy for me. I've also heard that, because I got one of the original, I think it's the original, from like 2002, I bought this copy of Bill Cooper's Behold a Pale Horse. And, you know, they killed him right after 9/11 or right before 9/11. Interesting. But I heard they took out, because he's got a bunch of like extra sort of sections in there. And one of them is the Protocols of the Elders of Zion, which according to official mainstream schools of thought, it's been debunked. It's anti-Semitic, blah, blah, blah. But whatever, let me make that choice. And it's in my copy, but I've heard they took it out of the new copies. So there you go. Paperbacks are kind of important now, right? Because even if you have that Kindle book, old Bezos can go in there and delete it, censor it, change words. They can do that. I can send an update. It updates your Kindle, right? Like your Kindle is connected to the internet on some level. Don't ask me how it works. I don't really know. There's also a bunch of symbolism and predictive programming. They were kind of warning us in the movies and stuff. Going back to that Francis Bacon spy Shakespearean idea of theater, ritualistic theater, how the two are connected. They say everything changed. Well, everything changed because that's what the plan was. They wanted everything to change. If you watch The Matrix, Neo's license expires 9/11/2001. How'd they know? How did they know? What are the odds? The Simpsons infamously had a picture of the Twin Towers on a thing that says 9/11. Terminator 2 had a thing where he's jumping the motorcycle. The clearance was 9/11. There was a rap group called The Coup that had an album called Party Music, released in June 2001. Had the Twin Towers exploding. I never heard it. That's Dead Prez on there if you're a hip-hop person. Back to the Future. I had a whole show on Back to the Future a few years back. Goes from Twin Pines, the Twin Towers, to Lone Pine, the single tower. It's a Kabbalistic alchemical idea, which we'll cover. Notorious B.I.G. This was floating around on socials recently. I put it on the Instagram. The lyrics from Juicy says, "Time to get paid, blow up like the World Trade," back in 94. Now, you know, and that takes us to the argument. Are these things irrational? Are people looking for something that's not there? I mean, people have been talking about running planes into the World Trade Center. It's one of the biggest targets ever. Which begs the question of if they really built this thing to withstand some serious attacks, such as what happened. The exact scenario, you know, they did try to blow it up in 1993. That's why Big said what he said. So it's not like he was predicting the future. He was just saying, like, they already tried to blow this thing up once. And then after 9/11, you had more pop culture. We had songs, country songs, Toby Keith, courtesy of the Red, White, and Blue. Alan Jackson, "Where Were You When the World Stopped Turning?" I've never heard either one of those songs, by the way. I know I've heard the verse on them. I don't do country, period. I hate it. I like all music. Can't stand country. It's my self-white hatred, I guess. Well, that's not true. Here's some white bands. Jackal, Iced Earth. They got in on the action even. They've got some 9/11 songs. I like both of those bands. There's a movie called World Trade Center starring the great Nick Cage. Nick Cage, saving the world from the terrorists. United 93. I mean, these are all movies showing us the version of events they want us to believe, because they know they can. Not only did we see it on the news, they're like, well, yeah, Nick Cage was on the, you know, at the World Trade Center. I remember, yeah. I never saw those movies. Some 9/11 movies I saw include Fahrenheit 9/11, Michael Moore, again, forming my granola woke liberal views. And, you know, Michael Moore's a little crazy. Don't get me wrong. I don't swing that hard. But he was right about that. The neocons had a hard on for all this. Zero Dark 30, again, another one of these, like, showing us the version of events they want us to believe in. Rah, 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 go team, go. But my favorite movie about 9/11, well, not about 9/11, but 9/11-esque, is Spike Lee's 25th Hour, one of the greatest films of all time. I mean, it's a real downer. It's like kind of a bummer movie, mostly. But it shows New York City post 9/11. It's got a real somber feeling, but, oh, it's so good. It's such a great, underrated movie. Ed Norton, Rosario Dawson, Philip Seymour Hoffman, I think, was in it. I think Silky from True Blood, whatever her name is. Silky, leave Silky alone. I'm really killing it on the impersonations today. Hope you're taking notes. Yeah, if you've never seen 25th Hour, and it's a bummer. It's like a drama, and it's a bummer, but man, one of the on my top 20 of all time. But so is Spring Breakers, so take that for what it's worth. Now, there's some anomalies to speak of. Each of these topics is a rabbit hole on its own that we're not going to go down, because we don't have time. My focus will be on the occult symbolism, which we've got a few more hours to talk about. But we're going to go through all the sort of strange oddities that 9/11 offered. To begin with, something I only recently found out, I think it was Sam Tripoli's Instagram. In October of 2001, and I fact-checked this, you know, trust but verify, Sam is my boy. But all these truthers, I'd fact-check all of them. I don't trust nobody. I don't trust it until I read it in the mainstream media. Isn't that the funny dynamic we have? Anyway, you know what I'm saying. In October 2001, right after 9/11, the Taliban offered to send Osama bin Laden to a third-party country. They wanted the U.S. to prove that he did it. We did not oblige that. Why? I don't know. Osama, again, going back to my previous point, this is like some big boy globalist stuff and we don't have all the info. I know that much. Bin Laden denied he was part of the attack. Statement on September 16th he made about it. Which, that doesn't really fit the narrative, does it? If these terrorists are open, like, there were many times that attacks have happened and the terrorists were jumping all over each other to be the first one to say, oh, that was us, that was us, that was me. So that math doesn't add up. Another one, September 10th, 2001, old Rummy, who's now dead. You know, David Icke used to pick on Rumsfeld all the time. That was back with my second stage of my red pilling on David Icke's Freedom Road VHS tape that I had. A copy of a VHS tape, I might add. He used to call him Monsanto Man, Mr. Monsanto Man. Anyway, Rumsfeld, who's dead, he said back on September 10th, 2001, you can find the clips of these as well, that the DOD cannot track $2.3 trillion. Couldn't find it. And the conspiracy is that, and I don't know if this is true, in the Pentagon where they kept the records, whatever that means, the West Wing of the Pentagon, where the hijacker ran that plane, that's where they kept the records, and that's what blew up. I don't know if that part's true or not, but I have heard the statement from Rumsfeld about that, about the missing money.
Our financial systems are decades old. According to some estimates, we cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
There was also, if you watch Loose Change, they talk about all these put options, basically stock betting against a company that were put on United Airlines and American Airlines right before September 11th. I haven't fact-checked it, but if that's true, very weird. This one from Loose Change as well. I fact-checked this. This one's almost unbelievable. That's why I fact-checked it, because I couldn't believe it. John Ashcroft, wait, is that his name? John Ashcroft? Yeah, Attorney General John Ashcroft, who's got that one wandering eye like homeboy from Friday. Oh, my mind is not working today. He was also Zeus in No Holds Barred against Hulk Hogan. I think he died from COVID, actually, if I'm not mistaken. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Ashcroft. I'm just going to read you from CBS News because I didn't believe it when I heard it on Loose Change. But I'm going to read you right from the news. Quote, in response to inquiries from CBS News over why Ashcroft was traveling exclusively by leased jet aircraft instead of commercial airlines, the Justice Department cited what it called a threat assessment by the FBI and said Ashcroft has been advised to travel only by private jet for the remainder of his term. Quote, there was a threat assessment and there are guidelines. He is acting under the guidelines, an FBI spokesman said. Neither the FBI nor the Justice Department, however, would identify what the threat was, when it was detected, or who made it. So, was Ashcroft just taking the advice of a threat assessment? Was he just wanting to fly private and that's a lie they said to, you know, do it? Or did he know? Because guess when that article was posted? July 26th, 2001. right along all those leaked FBI warning bulletins about hijackers running planes into buildings, the summer of 2001. We've got the infamous video of the Pentagon getting hit by the plane, which looks like a missile. And that pilot flying that plane was very incompetent. He could barely fly a Cessna. But here's the thing about that. Like, to play devil's advocate, it's kind of like the thing from 2020 that will never go away. You can find an expert for any opinion or conspiracy. So, like, you got to take that with a grain of salt. It's like people with the 2020 thing that will never go away. Like, well, no, Dr. So-and-so says you got to take the horse pills. Okay, well, like, there's quacky doctors everywhere. Okay. So take that for what it's worth. Sound like the, I'm starting to talk like the principal from South Park. There's quacky doctors everywhere, okay. But the same goes for the Pentagon. Like, you've got pilots on all sides saying, well, this guy's a bonehead. And maybe they're conspiracy theory pilots. I don't know, just throwing that out there. It doesn't make sense. Like, they said he did, like, this 330-degree corkscrew that wasn't possible and all this stuff. But to me, like, the proof is in the lack of releasing the video evidence. They haven't released the video. There's tons of them. There's several videos the FBI confiscated from the local areas. There was a gas station at Citgo, I believe. There was a, what, like an NSA building or something. And the FBI confiscated all the video footage, has not leaked or has not released any of it. Why? Good question. Why can't we see it if it's just a plane doing a remarkably great job when the pilot wasn't qualified to do that? George W. Bush supposedly stole the election. Michael Moore talks about this in the entire, if you watch Fahrenheit 9-1-1, there's a lot of allegations floated by Michael Moore about how they got Osama bin Laden's family out of America the day it happened. A lot of the argument is that he stole the election from Al Gore because Bush's brother, Jeb Bush, was the governor of Florida at the time. And we got more on Bush later. We'll talk about Bush a little bit more later. There were, like I said earlier, there's warnings of this exact same thing happening on FBI warnings and bulletins. You had USS Cole. You had multiple attempts against the World Trade Center bombing. Against the World Trade Center buildings. Actual bombings already happened. Then throw in the anomalies about passports. They find, like, a hijacker from Flight 11, Satam al-Sukami. There was a passport of his found by a person just before the South Tower collapsed, and they handed it to the NYPD detective, Yuk Chin.
1,000 tons of material have been brought from the Ground Zero Center behind me and out to Staten Island to the Fresh Kills dump, where it's all being examined. And one of the major developments that occurred overnight is that officials found a passport belonging to one of the terrorists. That was apparently found a couple of blocks away, because when one of the planes, or the first plane, slammed into the tower, you could see it on the video, in fact, debris flew out the other end. There's a belief that some of the cockpit just kept on going, and with that velocity went right through the building. Sources here on the ground have told me that they even found some body parts in the cockpit area. They believe that it is one of the terrorist bodies from the cockpit, because the clothing did not match clothing of airline pilots. So that's where some of that investigation is going today.
So supposedly they find the passports of the hijackers. Same goes for Flight 93. Found the photos and the passports all intact. But to play devil's advocate there, they did say they found, like, some people's credit cards and wallets. So, I mean, maybe. Another theory, terrorists, they're not dead. There's, if we go to an article from the BBC, I'll read you from it here. Quote, another of the men named by the FBI as a hijacker in the suicide attacks on Washington and New York has turned up alive and well. The identities of four of the 19 suspects accused of having carried out the attacks are now in doubt. Saudi Arabian pilot Walid al-Shari was one of five men that the FBI said had deliberately crashed American Airlines Flight 11 into the World Trade Center on 11 September. FBI Director Robert Mueller acknowledged on Thursday that the identity of several of the suicide hijackers is in doubt. Another one of the hijackers was... Oh, and let me get the name for you. You can look it up for yourself. Saeed Al-Ghami was... This is on Loose Change also, right? But I looked it up. And you can even read the Wikipedia about this guy. In the section, Mistaken Identity. I'll read you what they say. On September 23rd, 2001, before the FBI had released the pictures of the hijackers, the BBC and Daily Telegraph reported that a Saudi Airlines pilot named Saeed Al-Ghamdi was furious that a name on the hijackers list released by the FBI matched his own. CNN also showed a picture of the living Al-Ghamdi as the hijacker. The man claimed CNN likely got his picture from a flight safety flying school in Florida he attended. Der Spiegel later investigated the claims of living hijackers by the BBC and discovered them to be cases of mistaken identity. So you see, it was just a mistake. There was a whole different Saeed Al-Ghamdi who was at a flying school in Florida who got mixed up. I mean, maybe. How many of these guys are learning to fly in Florida? I don't know. Plus, you got the mystery of Osama bin Laden's death, another rabbit hole in itself. They say the SEALs killed him and threw his body in the ocean in accordance with, you know, Muslim whatever. But turns out that's completely not true. That's completely the opposite of how they would bury their people. And will we ever get the truth about that? I don't know. I remember they claimed when they stormed his compound, he had a list of books. And Manly P. Hall's book was included in there. So Osama bin Laden was a bit of a conspiracy theorist, it turns out. There's so much weird stuff going on. I can keep going. The population of America was confused. They thought Saddam orchestrated the attacks. How did that happen? Because the power of these forces to change the narrative are indeed quite capable of creating reality. Saudi Arabian terrorists hijacked the planes, so we go to Afghanistan and end up in Iraq. And the people in America are like, yeah, because Saddam did it. Yeah, that's right. And Loose Change makes these claims again. Again, you can find evidence to support whatever side of this argument you want to believe in. Some engineers say it's possible jet fuel can melt beams. Some people say it can't. I certainly don't know. Flight 77 was the first flight to vaporize upon impact ever, so Loose Change said. World Trade Center Tower 1, 2, and 7, because you got the whole World Trade Center 7 rabbit hole. It was the first three buildings in history to collapse from fire. That's what they said in Loose Change. Which, again, if you want to go more into detail on those aspects, you know, there's lots of people that cover that. Obviously, Loose Change, right? You can go there. They also make claims about Marvin Bush, the brother to George Bush. And I looked this up, found this very curious. He was, in fact, on the board of directors for a company called Stratasec, which was part of the World Trade Center security system. But where the math gets fuzzy as their contract supposedly expired in 1998. And then in 98, a new company called Kroll Inc. took over. And I found that curious because guess whose family that is? Nick Kroll. The comedian Nick Kroll, his father is who that Kroll Inc. company is named after. Lots of weird connections here. That Bush family's got their tentacles and everything. And, you know, Skull and Bones, right? Bonesman, old George H.W. They also make claims in loose change about UA Flight 93, how it went to Cleveland. About how they couldn't find some of those airplane black boxes, but yet they could find the passports. I do think that is very odd. And the United Airlines 93 families, they were allowed to listen to some of the black box recordings, but not allowed to talk about it or even take notes. And they couldn't hear the last 3 minutes. No one knows why. The FBI won't say. Why are we keeping all this covered up from the American public? 20 years later. And then there's all this money, right? You'll see that Larry Silverstein bought the World Trade Center in like July of 2001. Got a couple $1 billion from an insurance policy when it collapsed. You got the $2 million of put options on these airlines. They somehow knew they were going to go belly up. Convair Electronic Company claims insider trading was happening. There's claims of hundreds of billions of dollars of gold beneath the World Trade Center. I mean, there's a lot of weird motive in this. You got surveillance, you got warmongering, you got the big occult fantasy of the New World. That's just the angle I take. You know, and here's the thing. Why would they do this? Why would they do 9/11? People don't get it. They're like, who on earth would allow this to happen? Well, psychopaths, that's who. The attitude that people feel like they need to have billions of dollars that they'll never spend, they need more. These people are sick in the head. Of course they would do this. They already don't care about your life. You think this ends with massacre? Because human beings, we don't want war. We want peace. And they know this. They know the sheeple want peace. So they have to manufacture attacks and put on these ritualistic theater and get you mad. They need to condemn the pacifist as anti-patriots so that they can get what they want. And they got what they want. It was a setup for the Patriot Act to spy on you and invade your rights to privacy. And they say, well, you know, you don't have to have a cell phone. You don't have to do email. It's the same tactic they use in corporate America, assigning the blame and the shame upon the consumer. They say, hey, you know, we don't need to use all this plastic, but that's what people buy. No, you have more control than you think. They got the Department of Homeland Security. They got all these fusion centers. This is all for the Great Reset. I mean, they've talked about this. They've done this stuff, like the Operation Northwoods stuff, Operation Chaos. That was the CIA's domestic surveillance set up to disrupt the 60s hippies movement. Because, again, communists, the worst thing ever. They had Charles Manson MK-Ultra in the name of defending against enemies of the state, which ties into a lot of this sort of anti-right-wing military complex stuff. FBI was doing COINTELPRO. They were spying. They've always wanted to spy on us. Always. These intelligence agencies, these spy agencies, that's what they want. They want to get rid of the Constitution because it's, I don't know what it is. I don't know what this idea is, that they're the protectors and they're going to protect you even if it's against what you think you deserve. They know better. Get out of the way so they can protect you. And there's a bigger desire here by the Illuminati. Whatever you want to call this, the spider, the umbrella. It's to control the human mind. It's to alter the human mind. That's why they were doing all this work on mind control programs. That's why Francis Bacon was writing these Shakespearean plays. To manipulate you through entertainment. That's why they're spying on you through your cell phone, through social media, through the Patriot Act. They want order out of chaos, and it's their order, not yours. That's why it's the Freemasonic statement and the Skull and Bones motto, Ordo Ab Chao. The New World Order is what George Sr. advocated for on 9/11/91, 10 years prior. That's what he told you he was going to do it. Those Freemasons, those Bonesmen, they know the power of numerology, astrologically doing things on certain dates, Kabbalistic reasons they do it. And that's what happened. So there you go. That's part one. I know you want to come back for part two. We're going to talk about occult symbolism. We're going to talk about the occult ritual, a little as above, so below, the psyop. We're going to go deep diving into the two columns, the twin towers, the twin pillars, how two became one. I forgot about Spice Girls. They had one. They had a whole video called Two Becomes One with the World Trade Center in it back in, was it 99? Good song. But anyway, we'll gloss over, and we're going to talk about the numerology stuff, the numbers 10 and 11 and 9 and what their role is. We'll talk about Kenneth Grant, George Bush, Aleister Crowley, Freemasons. And then part 3 and 4, we'll come back and talk about S.K. Bain's book, 9/11 as a Mass Ritual, because it lays out the whole thing. So there you go. Stay subscribed to the show. Again, leave that review. I'm reading all the reviews until October 31st, 2021, and then I'm done. So if you got something to say, please say it. You want to help the show, drop a 5-star. That'll help keep things on the tracks, because you know what they want to do with this show. They want to censor me out of oblivion. And you, and the power's in your hands to make sure I stay on top of the algorithms. A lot of people are asking, well, where do you want me to leave it? I'd prefer Apple, because that's the easiest for me to find and read. But ultimately, I don't care. And even if you can't find the review thing, that's fine. Whatever. Not a big deal. I appreciate your listenership. So sit tight. I'll come right back and hit you with part 2 here soon. Till next time, stay woke.